This is The Topic is Trek, episode 92, for Friday, May 28th, 2021. Coming up in this episode, 100 days of quotes, 10 Jeopardy questions, one movie with two lead villains, all that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. Relaxing warp bubble bath. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another thrill-packed adventure on The Topic is Trek. Sounds really good. Let's see if we can pay it off. So I can't do it by myself. Of course, I'm Clinton, one of your co-hosts, but I do have co-hosts with me. Otherwise, I would not be a co-host. You following so far? Let's get somebody else in here right away to help me with this. So beaming in to join me from parts unknown is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Up your nose with a rubber hose.
Yeah, I think last week you did a little better. You were a little closer. You're going afield now, far, farther afield. I think Billy Mumy has wished you out there someplace again. You got to work your way back.
Okay. Yes, sir.
All right. And also joining us is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Fire at will. But Will moves pretty quick, so you're going to fire fast.
That's right. Which one is Will, by the way?
I always wondered when,
Is that Thomas or Will?
When Jonathan Frakes was on the bridge, that just wasn't the right thing to say.
He's right there.
Fire at will, and Worf takes out his phaser.
Okay.
I don't know why you wanted that, but there you go.
Knowing now what we know about that crew and their sense of humor, I wouldn't be surprised if that came up at least once.
So speaking of The Next Generation, as we just were, it was on May 23rd, 1994 that All Good Things premiered. So Next Generation ended 27 years ago.
Such a great ending, though.
Yeah, and then they tried to do the same kind of thing with Voyager. It was kind of weird.
I'm not there yet. I'm still in season four.
Oh, sorry.
Spoiler alert.
We're going to do spoilers among the three of us for a show that's been over since. Anyway.
Yeah.
My bad, I guess. Well, we have lots to talk about in this episode. We're going to do our subspace chatter. Don't tell Charlie yet. And after that, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Into Darkness. Then we'll have our warp speed roundtable question. So lots to cover. Let's get things started. We have to clear things first, of course, with Charlie. So, Charlie, are we all set for a subspace chatter?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Clearly, we are all set. So that's the big thumbs up from Charlie.
He doesn't have any more thumbs up than that.
He's such a team player.
He is. But the other side, that's the problem. All right. So take it away, Chuck.
Well, bit by bit, we're learning more about the upcoming Paramount Plus animated series for young children called Star Trek Prodigy. Recently, we not only had our first look at the seven main characters, we also found out that Captain Janeway will be portrayed as an emergency training hologram on the show. Please state the nature of the medical... the training emergency? What?
I guess so.
That just doesn't roll.
I gotta put these wheels back on my bicycle. I don't know.
Please state the nature of the training emergency. But there are still things we don't know, such as how does the young band of aliens accidentally come across an abandoned Starfleet vessel in the Delta Quadrant? And what is the dollar value to a Quatlu?
No, that's not.
Exchange value?
We're not going to get that answer. No.
We don't have all the answers, but in a recent interview with Kate Mulgrew, drew back the curtain on just a few more bits of information. As Ms. Mulgrew explains, and I will not impersonate her voice, five kids are incarcerated on an obscure planet in an uncharted part of the galaxy, and they escaped from their imprisonment and race across the planet to find a defunct starship buried in the sand of the planet's surface. They go in, and of course, the prison guards are coming after them, and they can't get the ship up, and the shields won't run, and suddenly someone hits a button, and... Ms. Mulgrew imitates a hologram startup sound.
Hello. State the nature of the captain emergency.
Who's hungry? Hello, kids. I see you're a little bit stuck here. Can I help you out? And it's Captain Janeway in a holographic form.
Yeah, welcome to Starbucks. What can I get for you?
Yeah, exactly. Coffee? You want coffee? I got coffee. Coffee. Yeah.
Coffee. Coffee in that nebula. We take note that the artwork we have previously seen depicts the crew of seven characters, not five. Does that mean the crew picks up hitchhikers? Don't panic. Mm. See what I did there?
Yeah, I did. The callback to the Hitchhiker's Guide, yes.
Was someone pulling a Jayla and using the starship as a home / Beastie Boys archive? More details, including the name of the vessel, are yet to come. But you know what? I'm putting my money... that the vessel's called USS Prodigy.
Yeah, you think so? With it being called Star Trek Prodigy?
Wasn't the USS Picard, was it? So we could be fooled.
No, it wasn't. That's true. But, you know, the general trend seems to be that. And I just have this feeling.
Star Trek. Well, Voyager, Star Trek, Deep Space
Nine. We're going to start a pool.
Good, because it's very, very warm here lately. So
it wasn't the USS Lower Decks.
No.
It could go either way, folks. We want to hear your vote.
It could. Yeah.
Let us know.
All right. Well, speaking of weird things.
Nice segue.
Rick and Morty, the animated Cartoon Network characters, have found themselves a lot of weird situations over the years. But now... in a new issue of the Rick and Morty comic book series, the scientist and his nephew have a few as his grandson.
Scientist, I don't know.
Somebody doesn't watch Rick and Morty.
No.
The scientist and his grandson may have come face to face with their greatest challenge. Someone has stolen Rick's brain. Dun, dun, dun. Well, technically, they stole his mind via a hat. But you get the idea. Yep, it looks like Rick and Morty are about to relive the events of Spock's brain. We wonder if that means Morty will have to wear a version of the teacher, making him smarter than Rick, at least for a while.
Yeah, a little while, at least.
Brain and brain. What is brain?
Not anything to do with that episode. That much we do know, indeed. All right. In the 100 days leading up to what would have been his 100th birthday, the @Roddenberry account is sending out a Gene Roddenberry quote every single day between now and his birthday, which is on August 12th, I believe.
Oh, so we're well into the 100 days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Identified with the hashtag ThinkTrek, each quote is accompanied by a video featuring a noted member of the Trek community giving the quote. If you don't want to search for them on the social media verse, you know, you can don't have to worry about that, because you can also ask your Amazon Echo to play the daily Roddenberry quote. It's still not your thing. Well, don't worry about that, because you can also listen to the daily podcast quoting Gene Roddenberry, hosted by actress Rachel True and blogger Trent Venegas. For instance, as we record this episode of The Topic is Trek, today's quote was presented by Emily Coates, who plays Lieutenant Detmer on Discovery. She shares this quote from Gene, quote, Star Trek was about ideas. It was about tolerance in a galaxy on a galaxy-wide scale. It was about affection for life forms. I'm just having trouble reading this page for some reason. Hold on, let me scroll up.
Infection of life forms.
Yes, about affection for life forms, whatever they look like, because they're different doesn't mean they're necessarily ugly or wrong. So as I said, you can find this stuff pretty much anywhere you look for it. I know it's on Twitter, and obviously it's on
the Alexa assistant?
Let me try. Play the Roddenberry quote of the day. Hello, computer.
Wait for it.
Wow. Maybe I'm having an internet outage right now.
Oh, my.
That was wonderful.
Yes. That was talent. Play the Roddenberry quote of the day. I think it's dead, Jim.
You can, during those spaces, you can fill in your own quote if you want to, people. Yeah. So just make something up and just put that in there.
I think he said, listen to the topic is Trek. It's great. Yes. Well,
call your mother.
So while Chuck reads the next story, I will try to fix my page, which is all messed up here. So carry on, Chuck, with our next story.
Friend of the show, Dr. Aaron McDonald, was the featured guest on a recent episode of the official Star Trek podcast, The Pod Directive. Dr. Aaron spoke with podcast co-host Paul F. Tompkins and Tawny Lewis about a wide variety of topics. But yeah, the first topic they discuss, the Threshold episode of Voyager.
No!
We're really scraping it here with Spock's brain and Threshold.
Right.
But once the bandage is ripped off that one, everyone moves on to talk about warp drive and other far less salamander-driven topics. The episode is titled Star Trek Science and Lizard Babies.
Well, she does say in this interview that she puts it down as her favorite episode because that always gets them to the interviewer to ask about it first, gets it out of the way because everyone always wants to ask questions about Threshold. So get it out of the way first and just be done with it and we can move on from there.
I'm going to start making a Dr. Aaron list of things I want her to science her way out of as I watch the show. There's a number of them.
It's about time to get her back on.
It is because we have many new things that have happened since last we spoke.
Yes. That's right. Speaking of podcasts, has anybody else been listening to Gates McFadden's podcast, Who Do You Think You Are?
I've listened to snippets from it, but I haven't heard an entire episode.
I've listened to every one of them. I think she's on episode 4. We had LeVar Burton. We had Jonathan Frakes. I think Jonathan was first. The latest one is part 1 with Will Wheaton, and it is a hoot.
Yeah, she says she spoke to him for 3 hours on the show.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. I have to go.
Well, you know, mother and son, they just, you know,
yeah. Blah, 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 blah. They haven't spoken in years.
Mom. Hey, space mom.
Well, that's how they introduce themselves. He goes, hey, space son. Hey, space mom. Or TV mom. Yeah. Hey, TV mom.
Yeah, that's right. Well, when Star Trek The Motion Picture failed to be a hit, I'm just not transitioning. I'm just going right into it.
No, that's fine. There's no transition out of Space Mom and TV Dad and Space Son and Uncle and the
Nephew.
Yeah.
All right. So when it failed to be a hit, Paramount was hoping for the studio had two choices, giving up on the franchise or trying again.
No,
but luckily they did, but with a smaller budget. Luckily for us, they did go with the second option. That's how we got Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
That was not sand blowing on SETI Alpha 5. It was a dirty, cheap lens.
Yes, they wiped it off and they went to another planet. But the lower budget was evident in many places, especially when it came to some special effects shots. As the Enterprise leaves Earth on what is supposed to be a simple training cruise, we hear everyone referring to the ship as being in space dock, but the footage we see is the recycled footage of the ship in the retrofit and the refit dry dock structure from the motion picture. It looks nothing like the mammoth space dock we see in Star Trek III. Fortunately, as a project, the film artist and Star Trek fan, Nick Acosta, has combined a variety of techniques to piece together a sequence that meshes perfectly with space dock. We see the search for Spock. We have a link to that video, and it's right here in the episode 92 at the blog archives of thetopicistrek.com.
Ding.
And that bell. Oh, that bell's lost some of its lust. I seem to remember it sounding more like bell-like sounding, but that was, yeah.
No. Ding.
you know what? I watched this and he did a good job with it, but my thought was, I never really gave that detail any thought ever.
Well, to me, honestly, I did. Well, I mean, it leapt out to me, first of all, that it's just the exact same footage recycled. I mean,
I meant, I know that. Yes, of course that. I meant like Space Dock. They're in the little cage.
I think obviously at the time, because there was nothing to compare it to, but when you then have Star Trek III, where you have this mammoth space dock that holds several starships inside of it.
Yeah.
And here's, you know, at the beginning of Star Trek II, here's the Enterprise leaving Earth just from this little like superstructure thing.
But there can be multiple different kinds of space dock.
As opposed to multiple one? Yes.
It was like the difference between a garage and a carport.
So I think in that case, it's a question of semantics, right? Mm-hmm. There's space dock. That's actually referred to as dry dock, though, what the Enterprise is in at the beginning of the motion picture, because it's there for work done as opposed to being just birthed someplace.
Yeah.
And so they refer to space dock in the dialogue.
Okay.
What we're seeing is a dry really dock. Is dry dock.
Yeah.
Well, I never really honestly gave it two thoughts ever since I saw the movie. So.
Well, you
it wasn't burning a hole in my brain.
Clearly it was a gaping problem with Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan. I mean, clearly.
Gaping hole. There's a plot hole.
Pulled everybody right out of it, and it's like it happens right at the beginning of the film. So everybody goes, I'm washing my hands of this movie that is clearly not space dock, that is just wrong.
A plot hole so big you could fly a starship through it.
You could, I mean,
Chuck. Did you ever think of that as an error of some sort? Did you ever consider that?
No, I didn't make the word space dock match, you know, what a space dock should be and go, oh, that's not the right word they should be using there. And if it was, I would have chalked it up to like, you know, grown-up parent-dad confusion where you call the kid by the wrong name. It happens all the time and you just do the natural interpretation.
Joe, John, Jack. Yeah, Jack.
You know who you are.
Don't lie to me, son.
Hey, you. Give me the remote.
I'll find out.
That's right. Anyway. I like that people pick out little details like that, but I should give him my geek card nail.
It bothered him so much. He went and found some footage and put it all back together.
That's right.
So I think it's not so much a case of bothering me. I don't think it really bothered anyone. It's just the fact that when you look at that trilogy of movies, there's a consistency from beginning to end to it in a lot of aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And in that light, to have it kind of starting off the same place it returns to makes a lot more sense. You know, it starts off leaving the space dock and then returns like this horrible, you know, pitted, destroyed thing to the same location. So I think if they'd been able to do something like that to begin with, I think it would have had, again, it felt more like the cohesion of the entire three movies together as one long story.
He's pretty rough on his ships.
He is. All right. So a clear segue from that story to one about BTS is like, good luck to that one. So I'm just going right into this one here. Crediting them with popularizing the South Korean trend of pressing the thumb and forefinger together to represent a heart, Stephen Colbert asked members of the K-pop band BTS to explain other new hand gestures. Of course, it was all done in fun, with band members doing things, gestures such as making the common V peace symbol and placing a finger on top of the other two to symbolize piece of pizza. But Trek fans were more intrigued by the fact that band member Jungkook gave the traditional Vulcan salute, saying it represented live long and prosper, and that he created the gesture and that Star Trek learned it from him.
What?
Wait.
He wasn't alive back then.
What? but how is that possible?
Time travel.
Duncan Massey says, Well, he anticipated our question and he replied, because Star Trek takes place in the future. And it's hard to argue with that kind of Vulcan logic. See, he invented it.
Dang it.
And then in the future, they find it.
Right.
Oh, okay. Like transparent aluminum.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Or transwarp beaming, but we'll get to that later.
He was ready with that sad answer.
Stupid Gen Zs. Got all the answers.
Wow, that doesn't sound like the bitter old man, does it?
Get off my Star Trek.
Get off my space lawn.
My space lawn.
Get off my subspace channel. All right.
Go over there and smell those flowers over there that are non-toxic for sure.
Speaking about subspace channels, that involves channels. Channels involve streaming and take it away, Chuck.
All right. There are two more countries that are set to scale the Paramount Mountain. Beginning August 11th, the service will launch in Australia and New Zealand. The service will cost $8.99 Australian. Currently, subscribers to the Australian version of All Access pay $9.99. There's no word yet on whether or not current subscribers will automatically see a reduction in their monthly subscription costs. There you go, ladies and gentlemen, down under. Go get them. Now you can catch up with the rest of us.
And then you'll enjoy the topic of Trek even more because you'll be all caught up on everything.
Yeah, they'll be out of breath for getting up that mountain to catch up with us.
That's right. But at the top, you know, Patrick Stewart's at the top and Stephen Colbert will make you a drink. It's, you know, it's fun.
I can't get that image of the flowers firing darts into Spock and then he becomes all peace, love, and happy hanging from a tree, Spock.
Because I would just mention the non-toxic flowers over there. Bang, in my garden. Yeah. And he wants to run off with the girl and, you know, he just went crazy.
I would have run off with that girl too.
Yeah. And finally, I was waiting for a
finally. Oh, we're getting to the end.
And finally, we already talked about the fact that LeVar Burton will be serving as one of the guest hosts on Jeopardy later this season.
Grumble, grumble, grumble.
But did you know that Star Trek has its own Jeopardy category at least twice? With the very different results.
We gave it a whole game. We played a whole Jeopardy game at Dragon Con 19.
We did.
Yeah, but I think more people probably watched this than...
than our catastrophe.
Than the two people that were in the... So anyway, the first time was in 1994 when Deep Space Nine was a category in the Jeopardy round. The contestants seemed reluctant to select the category.
Of course.
We'd have been like, clear that column. Anyway, one contestant marched down the column, correctly responding to the clues like the station is located next to the first one of these quadrant-to-quadrant shortcuts ever known. It's kind of a long question for that.
What is a trill?
It was a
no, but hold that thought.
What is Rectigino?
What is a Cisco? And the symbiont in the body of Terry Farrell. Well, her character, not.
Yeah, that's weird. That would just be really.
She had a symbiont one time, but they got it removed. The character. Anyway, I'm sorry, I messed up that one. The symbiont in the body of this Terry Farrell character was previously in a man's body.
Who is a Gorn?
Anyway, great job.
No.
What is a Gorn? You don't want a Gorn. But when the category devoted to Star Trek Voyager showed up in 1999, contestants held off until there were no clues on the board. In fact, one contestant tried to respond to any of the five clues. Only one contestant tried to respond to all the five clues. And they responded incorrectly. What were their hard clues? Oh boy, here we go. Maybe some were hard, but when Tim Russ presented his clue, he was dressed in his uniform and full makeup. And when he said, "On Voyager, I played Tuvok, the first Star Trek series regular from this race since Spock." Even Alex Trebek needled the contestants saying, "Did you notice his ears? He's a Vulcan."
It was so sad. I felt so.
Oh my God.
I mean, the actors obviously weren't there, but imagine you record this thing for Jeopardy. You're a category there. That's really exciting. they clear everything else off the board first.
Nuclear physicists are like struggling with it.
String theory for 400. Actually,
four,
you know what?
Four of the questions they don't even attempt to answer, and one person attempts to answer one of them and gets it wrong.
Tim Russ was at his house watching it, and he goes, they miss it, and he just takes his ears off and throws them on the floor.
Exactly.
Screw this. I'm going to have to go watch that. I did not see that.
It is. Well, luckily for you, we have links to both of the videos in the show notes for episode 92 over at the Topic is Trek.
What are quarks?
Deep Space Nine is sort of near quarks.
I think quark.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was in the quantum theory column. Sorry.
Oh, was Armin Shimerman on there too? The video.
I'm trying to remember if he. Well, the Deep Space Nine ones, they did not have the actors. They just had the actors for the Voyager ones. They had Robert Picardo, Ethan Phillips, and Tim Russ. I think the other two were just words on screen. I don't think they had five actors for that one. But
what are isolinear chips?
Yeah, but those three actors, you know, think, well, there goes my career. I was on Jeopardy, and no one knew anything about the show I was on. Awesome.
I do. You've probably seen this too, but I did see that episode of Regis and Kathy Lee with Armin Shimerman.
Yes.
Yeah, and he came out in makeup, and then he comes back out without it. It was pretty good. Not too bad.
Yeah, it's a long way to go for a bit, too, to dress up in all that makeup.
You know, what's funny is, you know, I've seen him like that so many times. It just seemed natural watching a guy in all that makeup talking to Regis and Kathy. You know?
They were about as clueless, too. And you run a bar?
Yeah.
Anybody drink from those glasses?
Why, wow,
what is in that stuff?
Anyway. He had the teeth in and everything.
Yep.
Yeah, that would have been easy to be understood.
He commits.
All right. And in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news, well, your call is important. Please stand by. We have nothing new.
Oh, man. Out of there. I think we're just going to have to record that message.
We are.
Hit him up on Twitter.
So that is all that we have for our stories. However, there are links to 67 additional stories over in the show notes for episode 92 over at thetopicistrek.com. Everything from how Data got drunk on TNG to what Trek-related thing Jeff Bezos was up to 27 years ago. And it wasn't building his first yacht. I'll give you a clue on that one.
He was trying to buy the last episode of Star Trek and Next Generation. Oh, wasn't that 27 years ago?
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. Gonna buy it out a whole series. Yeah.
Couldn't you buy the last episode of Enterprise instead and make sure that never sees the light of day? Anyway.
reboot it before the end of the series.
So this time around, because it helps me working on the show notes, when you go over to see all these different links to stories, they're actually broken out by which flavor of Star Trek the article is related to. We've got a section that has Star Trek Beyond, Next Generation, Picard, Lower Decks, Discovery, Enterprise, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, Star Trek, the original series, the Star Trek Section 31 series.
That doesn't exist. We can't admit that those articles exist.
And Star Trek Planet of the Titans, for those of you who know what that is. There's even something there. Plus, a bunch of franchise-wise and miscellaneous stories.
Merchandising!
Whatever your needs are, we've got some additional stories there that you can read through. All right. And on that, it's time to say goodbye to Charlie. So, my favorite part, as we all know. Bye-bye, Charlie!
Cheerful Charlie.
I want to stay.
I feel so much lighter after he's gone. It feels good.
Like a fresh breeze just blew through a gym locker room.
Indeed.
No.
All right.
Oh, no. Those were
a fresh breeze, not an internal fan.
Not that somebody outside. Found some gym socks that somebody forgot over the summer.
No, we don't want that. None of that. All right. But it's time to head out on our main mission. So we'll have an appropriate sound effect.
We're looking for the main mission, Captain.
What's a little anticlimactic for a sound effect, isn't it?
Fine.
There you go. And we've lost one of our co-hosts. There goes Craig.
Ow, it burns.
All right, it's time to head out. This time we're going to be talking about the follow-up to 2009 successful reboot of the Star Trek franchise. Of course, we're speaking about Star Trek Into Darkness. Mm-hmm. Why don't you give us a bit of background, a little stats and so forth, if you will, on this one, Chuck?
Okay, this is going to sound like a repeat from the last one in certain parts. Star Trek Into Darkness, the screenplay was by Robert Orci, Alex Kurtzman, both who were already on the previous 2009 Star Trek film, and Damon Lindelof, the series creator of Lost, who also produced on this and the 2009 film. Music, repeat by Michael Giacchino, directed once again by J.J. Abrams, although the new line item here is... It premiered on May 16th, 2013, just 8 years ago.
Yeah, if it premiered on the same day, that would be very confusing.
Well, yeah. It could have been like Back to the Future, and they filmed them both at the same time.
True.
Okay, a few more numbers. The budget for Into Darkness was $190 million versus the previous film, which was $140 million. And although Trek fans have mixed emotions that we'll hear about on this film, it seemed to do well with the general public. This is the highest grossing film in Trek history. It brought in $229 million domestically and $467 million worldwide.
Hmm. Wow.
Half a billion dollars almost.
Well, yeah, the domestic was just higher than the budget, though. I mean, 229 over 190 is kind of skimming by, but they made it up for...
Well, in one country. I mean, you know, but globally, yeah, it did...
Well, plus the fact that, I mean, then you get all the stuff that comes after that, the merchandising, the residuals, you know, the deal struck with, you know, who's going to play it on television, blah, blah, blah,
stream
blah,
it.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. The DVDs and so forth. So
Star Trek Into Darkness, Clinton.
Yeah. Boy, yeah.
You can go to our link for our affiliate. That's right.
Merchandising Star Trek Into Darkness. The hair curler.
Well.
Anyway, so here's a very brief synopsis. After making questionable decisions on an alien planet, James T. Kirk is relieved as captain of the Enterprise and ordered to return to Starfleet Academy. However, after a series of terrorist attacks on Earth, including one that kills Admiral Pike.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, is that a spoiler alert? Kirk convinces Admiral Marcus to give him back the Enterprise and pursue the man responsible for the destruction.
All right, a quick couple of fun facts about this film before we get into our love fest for this movie, I'm sure. In a deleted scene from the film, Kirk describes the survey of the planet Nibiru as uneventful. And we hear actually Admiral Pike say that that's what Kirk says. But Kirk also states in his log that no one from the crew ever set foot on the surface of the planet. So he out and out lies in the captain's log.
Well, that was the whole point of that conversation.
Right. After reading a request on Twitter, composer Michael Giacchino added a bit of TOS music to the fight scene between Khan and Spock on the hovering garbage barges. It's the classic fight to the death music from Amok Time. The film's end credits acknowledge the composer of the music, Gerald Fried. And by the way, this movie even went a bit further with the end credits. We talked about how in Star Trek 2009, all the credits are in alphabetical order. The exception to that being the two special guests, if you will, Eric Bana and Leonard Nimoy are listed separately. This time around, everyone is listed in alphabetical order at the end of the movie.
No special treatment this time, Leonard.
That's right. Yeah. McCoy is performing experiments on a dead Tribble in this movie, which we will also talk about. Later, after many tremors, explosions, and the Enterprise being literally upside down in space, because whatever, the Tribble is seen resting in the same spot.
They're sticky on the bottom.
Yeah, there's no way it could have been still in the same table, and McCoy obviously had very different problems than to care about a dead Tribble to be put back to, you know. So, yeah, I that's one of the many, many issues with this film.
No, everybody knows that when a Tribble gets in a panic situation, the claws come out.
But it's a flat surface. I don't know exactly how that's going to work. All right. So I have, again, kind of a general outline of this movie and possibly some topics, but I'm going to just begin. And as we did with the Star Trek 2009 film, feel free to jump in. And we're probably going to be bouncing around a whole lot with this one. So let's start at the beginning, though. Our first scene that takes place that was uneventful.
The more I watch of this opening scene, the more confused I get.
So, yeah, I agree with you here. There are questions that don't get answered. Now, there are some obvious ones, but one that I have is, what was Kirk supposedly doing with that scroll? Did he know they were going to come chasing after?
Well, he stated that, because McCoy said, what is that? He says they were bowing to it. So he took it to draw them away from the village.
That was his plan to begin with. That he didn't have a plan to get them to chase him.
On the fly, he grabbed it and ran because he knew they would chase him.
Bigger question, why do they need to save that race?
Well, that's the huge question.
Yeah. They were there to survey the planet, and they realized that the volcano was about to explode and kill all the people. So they thought they would go down there and...
But Spock is all about, you know,
not interfering. Yet he's the one that's freezing the volcano. And why didn't they do that 30 minutes earlier? Why are they waiting until, you know, Kirk and McCoy are safely back on the Enterprise?
Which, for some unknown reason, is submerged.
Instead of in space. Yeah.
Now, well, they also didn't know the fusion thing was going to work properly, so that's why they were drawing everybody away. All the aliens.
This whole thing was full of holes.
I thought the idea was they were drawing the aliens away. I mean, they would never be far enough away if the volcano went off. I thought they were drawing them away so that the shuttle would not be spotted.
That too, but he did say he knew that they would chase them, so they were.
Right, so he was trying to get them away from that whole area so they wouldn't see what
I guess that was either to not see the shuttle, and probably because that makes sense.
The shuttle was already, they said that the cloud took care of that. The ash cloud concealed the shuttle.
I figured it was for safety, and then they ended up seeing the Enterprise when the shuttle sort of...
That kind of got blown out of the water. Yeah. Every pun intended on that one.
I enjoyed the first scene. I think visually, I thought it was fantastic.
Visually, it was fun.
Visually, it was great.
I sent this to you guys earlier just so you could see it, but it reminded me of this aesthetic of the Golden Key comics, which are, they're old, and they had some really cool art on the cover. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, we all did voices for one for my Dog Days of Podcasting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I sent y'all a PDF of one, but there's two of them where it's Star Trek and they're underwater, or they at least got water suits on. But those suits, the color of the planet, the whole aesthetic reminded me of those comics. And
they jumped off a cliff,
really enjoyed it.
Landed in the water feet first, and yet they can suddenly surface dive.
Clinch up when you hit that water.
That's right.
Yeah. They somehow surface dive down.
And the water gets real deep, real.
Yeah.
The water gets real deep, real fast, right off that cliff.
Well, I mean, that often happens with cliffs. You know, you look at the fjords. It could be that type of underwater topography. But
I just, there was no explanation given. So while visually it was very interesting, you know, and well executed, I didn't understand any of it. It's like, why was it down there? There's no explanation given as to why it's down there.
Yeah, the whole scene was a little thin to set up the fact that Kirk lied, interfered with the Prime Directive. I mean, there were a number of ways we could have executed that premise better.
And they could have totally kept the ship in space, beamed McCoy and Kirk down if they were going to go infiltrate the thing. Send a shuttle from an area up through the cloud so that they wouldn't see it. So, yes, there was another way to do that rather than sinking the ship for a day and a half.
Yeah. So what I was realizing here is that what we're getting with these movies is that James Bond type of thing, where you have the big action sequence, then title, then into main story.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sometimes...
Well, Star Trek did that, the TOS.
But that was a teaser for the episode. It was some kind of a cliffhanger thing, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, like a big action sequence type of thing. It was just kind of the setup to the piece. And I think, unlike James, you know, not all the James Bond movies, but you know, several of the James Bond movies where that action sequence has nothing to do with anything else that happens in the movie.
Right.
At least in this case, it is.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It is, you know, part of it. And in this case, it's the justification for the command chair being being taken away from Kirk.
Yeah, which, the setup. Yeah.
Which, you know, that was an issue that people had with Star Trek 2009, was that really he's in Starfleet Academy for 3 years and he gets his own ship. Well, how does that work out? And I think that whole beginning part was to say, well,
he's not that good at it yet. It
doesn't necessarily work out, you know, so well to begin with.
Yeah. It wasn't 100% ready. Yeah. Yeah. So, and by the way, you know, I'm jumping around, you know, Kirk with the alien ladies. That was the kind of cliche, wasn't it?
With the the twins with the tails.
Yeah.
Overall, I liked the story and the way they wove in Admiral Marcus's deceit and mm-hmm. how it reveals itself. The one thing that we didn't need to use the character Khan in here.
I think you mean John Harrison?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
They could have made up a new character for canon and said, you know, this is a very strong man, or you know, he's got some sort of genetic abilities that we don't understand from planet blah blah blah.
Well, why do you even need that? I mean, basically the entire movie is the premise of the movie is that Marcus wants this war, so he's happy to sacrifice the Enterprise to get it.
Yeah.
Why do you even need the Khan?
Yeah.
You don't.
The story anyway.
Well, I've always thought, well, like I said, overall, I like the movie, but the Khan stuff, like you guys said, they should have just left it out. Even the mirror, you know, Kirk dying with and Spock on that, all that stuff, every bit of it. But I thought Benedict was a little bit wasted talent because he shouldn't have been Khan. They, like you said, they should have just left him as John Harrison. And then at the end, the twist would have been, oh, you find out John Harrison was one of Khan's guys and he's in a tube, you know, and there's all the tubes, you know, just that as a twist. I see.
And so maybe it wasn't even Khan. It was just another. That's right. Because one of the questions there is like, okay, you've got 73 cryogenic tubes. Mm-hmm. I guess in both universes, you just randomly choose. Well, no, he was triggered to activate first. So wasn't he on the sleeper ship?
Yes. Yeah, okay.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, Botany Bay.
Cause otherwise just like, wow, what are the odds picking the same guy two times in a row?
Well, I don't know if they actually, it was triggered to do that, but they sure did. Kirk and everybody was breaking the glass. They were trying to get him out, you know?
Well, yeah. Cause it failed. I think they were saying like, you know, the mechanism was too old and it just wasn't working correctly.
But yeah. Imagine though, if that was the twist, you know, at the very end of the movie, somebody mentions, he was, you know, one of the
cryo tubes off of the Botany Bay.
Yeah. And he mentions, and then as they pan out, you see one of the tubes says Khan or something on, you know, you go, holy crap. That would have been a really cool reveal, but.
Yeah. Because we're left really in this one with, you know, I mentioned in our tease for the show, you've got one movie with two lead villains.
Yeah.
You know, who is your lead villain in this? Because at some points it's Marcus, but then after Marcus is gone, there's still Khan. So it's first it's Khan, then it's Marcus, and it's back to Khan. It's like, okay, pick a lane. Who is the bad guy here?
Yeah. Well, I will say this, Peter Weller's voice is awesome.
Yes.
You mean RoboCop?
Yeah, RoboCop.
He said freeze creep to Khan. I thought that was, you know, pretty interesting.
He's playing you, son.
Yeah.
Like a fiddle.
Yeah, I did like that ship. That is one badass
vengeance.
Ship.
Yeah, vengeance, which I love. Whether or not they intended to be that it was this callback, because if you recall, the original title for Star Trek II was supposed to be The Vengeance of Khan.
Ah, nice.
Oh, that's true.
I have no idea if, you know, that was any intent on their part.
And Star Wars III was Revenge of the Jedi.
Yes, which I do. I actually have the promotion. I have one of the promotional material insets for that.
I bet you do. Hey, by the way, the bar scene, I want to talk about that for a second. I kind of teased that last episode. Mm-hmm. That is probably some of the best subtle acting I've seen. When Pike's telling him what's going to happen and it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And then Kirk kind of is looking at him like that son looking up at a father, you know, and just the subtlety. He barely itches out a grin and is looking at him. I love that moment.
There were some good moments in the acting. The other one that I like is when Kirk is telling Spock, you know, I'm going to miss you. And Zachary opens up his mouth just slightly as if he wants to say something and then closes it again. And Chris just goes, and walks away. There were moments like that. Like, whoa, that was well timed out.
So I got a question for you, you know, based off of that scene between Pike with his very Elvis official Starfleet sideburns.
I noticed that too.
Down the cheek.
Yeah.
Those are mutton chops, man.
And Kirk. So clearly, you know, we'd established in the first movie that essentially Pike is the father that Kirk never had.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Was it over the top to have him killed? Was that unnecessary to do in this movie? I felt like it was a bit of a waste to do that.
I thought so at first too, but it really gave you that Kirk's vengeance to go after John Harrison.
Yeah, right.
How would you have gotten that impact? Like, I'm gonna go kill that MF, and even if we have to go into Klingon territory, we're gonna get them.
Yeah, so, it's the drive to get there.
I don't know that, you know, not killing him would have done that and say, oh, man, you shot up Starfleet headquarters. You're a bad guy. I'm going to get you.
Well, I just feel like, you know, he gets tortured in the first one and they have to come and rescue him. This time he gets killed.
Had a rough life, didn't he?
Yeah. It's like, man, I think the wheelchair is starting to look pretty good all of a sudden. I don't know.
Give him some of Harrison's blood.
Yeah. As a character, I wasn't ready to let go of him because I was like, crap, I really wanted him to stick around a little bit longer, but you're right, Chuck. I think it drove or it caused Kirk to really want to go, and it was the Wrath of Kirk. That's what this should have been called, Star Trek.
Well, at first it was. At first it was, and then he realized, you know, he was being played, but
he was willing to take his shit back. I'll go into Klingon shit. I'll go to Klingon homeworld. I don't care. This is going to happen.
Right. And the fact that I think that's where you start to get the inklings with it. They're trying to imply that he's growing into the chair because he's given a direct order to do this thing and he gets his ship back to do it. And he's like happy to sit in the captain's chair, but he's convinced by members of his senior staff that we shouldn't be doing this. This is wrong. And he changes his mind and says, well, I'm going to personally then go to the planet and get him and bring him back to stand trial.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Completely against, you know, orders from his superior.
And by the way, speaking of Pike's death, I thought the death scene was well done. And I got a strange vibe. Like,
it was creepy.
When Spock,
it was creepy.
And I was like, well, Spock went, oh, here's an opportunity for me to see what this is like.
Which he comes out and says that's what it was.
Yeah, it confused me at first. Like, what the heck? You don't just go up to somebody who's dying and go, hey, what are you thinking
He wasn't. I mean, he wasn't trying to comfort Pike.
No.
He wasn't trying to, you know, imbibe his katra. He just was experiencing death. That's all. Mm-hmm. That's all he was doing. I think, I don't know about that.
That was a little weird.
Speaking of conflict, what did you think about the conflict between Kirk and Scotty over the torpedoes and the fuel and him resigning?
Yeah, obviously for the plot, you need Scotty to not be in the Enterprise.
Right.
But I just don't see him resigning his command, his commission, his commission over the issue.
Yeah.
It felt forced that, they won't let me look inside the torpedo.
I'm out of here.
Because it's top secret. So I'm resigning.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a little weird. I mean, you'd think he would maybe just keep trying to find a way to see what was in them instead of
exactly,
scanning it deeper. I don't know, something
more intensely, faster, more intense.
Right. But yeah, I did think that was a little weird. However, I did kind of like where he's in the bar with Keenser and they have that kind of moment where they have a conversation without Keenser having to say anything. Mm-hmm. He goes, okay, then.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not doing anything for that man. Yeah. All right,
Captain then, James T. Perfect hair.
Yeah, but he was having a conversation with Keenser without him even saying anything.
Which I gotta think that's the way most of the conversations go.
The only person who had slightly more lines than that was the guy with the dying daughter. He had two lines. He said, "What did you say?" and "Who are you?"
Yeah.
And then he blew up the archive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like there was an opportunity there to really play off of this concept of social engineering. And it's just like this passing thing where
it was there, and you see it because I watched this back to back in 24 hours, and it was there, but you had to know to look for it as you watch the movie. Like, this is the thread. When Khan was doing his setup to get everybody in Starfleet into that one room so that he could shoot them,
yes,
he used the guy. He said, "All right, I got to go find somebody who's really in dire straits to get them to do something that would require Starfleet to get everybody together." So here's a guy with a daughter dying from some illness, let's call it leukemia, and he says, "I can save her if you do this for me." But yeah, it was a social engineering, but it was glossed over a bit.
Yeah. Hmm. I thought it was, to me, there's a big structure to the story. My problem with it is that I don't feel like it had a beginning, a middle, and an end that played together.
Yes.
It was a linear story, but we weren't getting a lot of payoff of this to that, or this setup leads to this next action. It was more like, here is the master plan, and we're just going to run it down.
Mm-hmm.
Khan is going to do this. Marcus is going to do that. Then he's going to send Kirk to do this. And then Marcus is going to do that. And then
Khan is going
to do this, and you get to the end. And it didn't seem to, I didn't get enveloped in the story. The story just felt like I was trying to follow a story, very linear story.
Rather than having a couple of subplots that come together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although McCoy's metaphors were fun.
Yes.
You don't rob a bank.
Lot of them.
Yeah.
Lot of them.
You don't rob a bank with when your getaway car has a flat tire.
Here's what Here's what I had. More McCoy. So I'll enjoy that for sure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just told him to play a poker game. He's got no cards and told him to bluff.
Yeah. I mean, he had a good couple of moments in the
C-section.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. C-section on a Gorn. Quintuple or octuplets is what it was. Those old bastards bite.
Yeah.
they mentioned a mud incident.
Yes, the mud incident is actually in the comic that preceded this movie, Countdown.
I did read that. I may even have it.
Yeah.
I don't have it at hand, but yeah.
Right. So the, it's kind of a throwaway line. The concept being they just had to have some
reference to the comic.
Shuttle that was not a
ship. Yeah, it was not a
Starfleet vehicle.
Yeah, they can't just throw a tarp over the shuttle.
Yeah, exactly.
So why did the Klingon ship sound an awful lot like TIE fighters?
ILM was involved. I guess.
Hey, we need a sound effect.
It was a nice reinterpretation of a Klingon bird of prey, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very true to what we'd seen other places, but it definitely had its own set of features, and you saw a lot more use of why it had a flexible wing on it.
Yep.
So that was nice to see.
We saw blue-eyed Klingon.
Yeah, we get another interpretation of Klingons in this one.
This yeah.
A series of jewelry down the ridge on their forehead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they really did anything for me.
Well, I mean, they're not in it for that long. What I found interesting is how they knew so much about this exact location of where Khan was.
It's uninhabited.
It's an uninhabited section of Kronos.
It's probably pretty big, and they happen to land right where Khan is.
Plus, they get that from a set of the four coordinates, which are not just the location of Kronos, but an exact, very specific, tiny spot on Kronos.
Right.
And they said they detected a life sign, so.
Okay, we'll work with that.
They got his location.
To be uninhabited, so.
Right, but they got his location from just the four digits, the set of four numbers on the, now it's portable, and anyone can use one, the portable transwarp teleport.
I know, but it's like, you're just taking the transporter and just is way up. It's such a technical marvel. You can really do anything at this point.
And the implication being there that was a Section 31 project, that which is how he got the thing.
Because mm-hmm. he worked in Section 31 for a while on the torpedoes. Uh-huh. So he's been stealing company secrets.
Exactly. He didn't sign an NDA. That's the
thing. So he's able to talk about it.
Otherwise, they would have been able to get him on a technicality.
Well, Clinton, you had mentioned earlier that you didn't think the Spock talking to Spock scene was necessary. I have another throwaway scene.
I don't.
I do not understand anything that Spock Prime told Kelvin Timeline Spock that was used.
If you skip that chapter whenever you're watching it, I think the story would have still played out the same.
Oh yeah, because the only reason he was there.
How did they defeat Khan
at great cost? Like,
right,
I had to die. Okay,
right. So what is it that I fibbed when I said minutes would seem like hours? I mean, what exactly was it that he said to him that led to the series of events that followed?
Maybe, you know, you might have something there. He bent the truth because Vulcans don't lie. And that's kind of what Spock Kelvin did with the torpedoes.
Yeah, but he kind of did that almost as like just a throwaway when they're doing repairs. That's not how they defeated Khan.
True. Yeah, it was a way to get the people back on the ship without Prime Khan understanding.
I love Leonard Nimoy, but he did not need to be in this.
We blew up his ship. That's how we defeated him. And so they, I don't know, I guess. Well, he actually blew up his own ship. Well, that's it. We got him to blow up his own ship.
Yeah, you try that.
Yeah.
See how it goes.
Yeah, okay, how am I going to do that? Oh, well, I know, I'll take those torpedoes.
I can't tell you. I've made a solemn oath not to interfere with your time.
Yeah, well, the whole other thing, Prime Spock's experience is somewhat totally different because they had the Genesis thing, and you know, and he was there, they were on different ships, and what could he have told him?
So good I luck. Would like to know what he told them and how that led to anything that happened after.
Khan, he thinks in two dimensions.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is live long.
Is it height, width, or length, and length and height, or depth and no, never mind.
It's 23, 17, 46, 11. Those are today's winning lotto numbers, by the way. The other scene that I thought could have been thrown away was the Carol Marcus getting changed, the underwear scene. Like
No. I disagree.
I knew Craig would disagree with that, but it served no purpose.
I thought it was interesting that the counter argument to that Abrams gave is that there was a scene that got cut, therefore it completely undermines his argument here, that we see Benedict Cumberbatch in a sonic shower, mostly undressed. But they cut that scene. So what's your point here exactly? You know, JJ, I don't.
Yeah.
If you don't see it, it didn't happen.
Why? Speaking of Carol Marcus, why did her beam out take so long?
Oh, the way she got to run off almost entirely off the bridge?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's a good question.
One of the longest because
her blonde
the
hair.
Shields were up, and it was harder for the Vengeance's transporters to work through the shields. They could work through the shields, but it was very hard for them to do so, and therefore it took longer. How's that? Is that working for you?
I don't think the shields were up at that point.
Oh, well, then that blows an entire, I don't know.
Yeah. And even still it would have been Starfleet to Starfleet protocol, which still should have worked. I don't know.
The
Tribble. Let's get back to the Tribble.
Yeah, the Tribble. It was almost as if this was not a point in the story when they got to that scene and figured out we need to have some way
to bring Kirk back.
To show that McCoy is doing this research. So we'll have Kirk in the middle of this intense questioning of Khan when the ship is in peril to say, "Hey, Bones, what are you doing with that Tribble?"
Uh-huh.
What?
Yeah. Squirrel. I mean, Tribble.
Hey, Bones, why is there a pin on your desk?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that a new ring?
Your hair differently? I don't know.
You get a new earring?
Yeah. Hey, the whole jail scene, the brig scene with Khan. I kind of liked it until he said Khan. Even in the theater, I remember going,
oh, God. Mm-hmm. That was a real letdown.
Well, part of that was due to the fact that we were told, even though fandom had deduced that it was Khan, we were told no, it's not. It's this character named John Harris. It's like.
I think they did a pretty good job covering that up because
because people said it was kind of, no, it's not. It's not.
Right. Gone. Right. I'm just saying that they sold it. They tried so hard to sell it. I was like, okay, I'm not sure if it is. I read somewhere it was going to be Khan. And I was like, oh, okay. So when they said it, I was like, oh, dang it. You know?
So in the last movie, the engine room looked like a brewery, and we do get a quick glimpse of those vats once again. But in this one, it's very much centered around the Lawrence Livermore National Labs National Ignition Facility.
Yes.
I thought that was an impressive looking scene. They did, you know, if you didn't know that was a real place on Earth, that was pretty cool.
It was cool. I thought it looked great as a warp core.
And it practically could be a warp core.
Yeah. So how lax is Section 31 security that a random shuttle can just fly up to your secret base without anyone noticing it and then have it sneak its way into the facility without anyone noticing it?
He pulled the Wizard of Oz guards. I expected as the other shuttles were coming in, they'd be going, oh, yo, yo, yo. And then they just sort of snuck in with them. I was like, that was awesome.
I read that they updated protocols after that incident.
Yeah, exactly. Because then you have the security person who confronts Scotty, and then just like it was like a replay of that scene. Only the computer seems to be talking. It's like, who is that on that communicator, and why are they doing a countdown? Maybe because something's going to happen when it reaches zero. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's why he was private security and not Starfleet security, or he would have known that.
Yeah. Well, he must be related to the Klingons that were like, remember in, when the countdown on the bridge before,
the only the computer is talking here on the bridge.
What's it saying? Get up. Anyway. And of course, when they put on the spacesuits to dive again, I was like, really? We're going to space dive again?
But it's different this time because There's only two of them, and it's ship to ship. It's completely different than the other time.
Yeah, I mean,
I did get a kick out of the line though, where Kirk tells Chekov that you're in charge of engineering. Engineering now, go put on a red shirt. And
yeah,
the look on Anton's face. Oh, this is not good at all.
Yeah, he didn't look thrilled. He looked like, I'm not thrilled, but I'm going to obey.
Yeah. Okay.
My that final question as they were, Khan crashes the ship into the Bay Area, climbs off the ship, Spock beams down, and just as Khan is running away, he grabs a jacket and puts it on for whatever reason. There was no need for that jacket other than to see him more clearly.
Probably slow him down aerodynamically.
As he's running through the crowd, that's all it was for, was so the photographer could go, which one of these people is he?
There
was no point.
It could be another one of those continuity things where they shot the sequence with the fight where he has the jacket on, and then they're doing the other part and they realize, oh my God, he doesn't have the jacket on. We have to have him get the jacket on. It's like, it's the Tribble scene all over again. Oh, we have to have the explanation of the Tribble. It's like you're watching the patches to the movie script happening on screen.
Right.
It's updated to 1.11 now. Oh, good. Tell me when it's done.
Movie patch.
And the whole fight scene reminded me of something like Indiana Jones or something, you know, where they're jumping from one ship to another or one vehicle to another, and they're fighting, and it looked like the Last Crusade almost.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. I mean, dun, 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 oh. dun, dun, dun.
I know we mentioned this a little bit, but Scotty on the USS Vengeance was funny. Especially when he would.
I'm running. Yes. He's giving him a status update like every 100 meters or so.
He almost like Austin Powers driving the little cart down the whole long hallway. He's having to run. That was hilarious. Then he had to run back.
So I'm trying to remember the background on that. I mean, I know that it was shot in just like this warehouse that, you know, they were scouting locations, and they get to this empty warehouse and J.J. Abrams says, this will work. This is going to be the hangar area. And everybody's looking, going, but that, you know, it's got these bare walls. It's like all this stuff. This
perfect.
You said you bring the lights down, you put a light here, a light here, a light here, a light here. It's going to work fine. And yeah, no one noticed that it was just, you know, if you turned on all the lights in there, it was just this empty warehouse.
I bought it. I thought it looked great.
And I think he was also getting a big kick out of making Simon Pegg run back and forth times.
Wait, cut, do it again. Take 12.
Didn't have the camera rolling. Let's try that one again.
Oh, we forgot to put film in the camera.
Yes, it doesn't use film. It's digital, you bastard.
All right, we forgot to put film in the digital then. Okay, there we
batteries. Go. Batteries run out. The SD card's full.
Exactly. All righty. So it's time. It's time, my friends.
Is it rating time?
It's rating time. So we're going to do a scale of 1 to 10 zombie tribbles.
I'm just kidding. 1 to 10 zombie tribbles.
Brain. Brain. I will go first. Boy, I'm struggling with this one. I like the production values. Mm-hmm. I like the acting.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, I think the story just needed a lot more drafts before it was ready. So I'm going to give it
worth thought
between, I'm struggling between, I'm going to go with a five. I'm going to give it a five. I'm going to go down the middle on it.
I don't think it's, well, it's up to you.
I don't know. I was
your four. Correct.
I love the delivery on that.
I was going with a 4.5, and I go. I'm revising down to where I was. I'm going to go down to a 4.5 on that one.
Trust your gut. Stay on target.
Okay. All right. No, different franchise. Okay.
Who's next?
Who wants to go next?
Craig.
You go, Chuck.
Oh, yeah. Chuck. We're pointing fingers at each other.
Here you go. Let's play rock paper. No. Go ahead. Rock paper scissors. Spot.
All right. I agree with what Clinton said. You know, production. The effects, it was a lot of fun to watch. It just didn't make a heck of a lot of sense when you stitch all these pieces together. There was the promise, or the you could see that the story could have been better, like you said, potential with a few more drafts. I'm going with a six. I think there was a little more entertainment factor that I could escape with on that one.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And what say you, Craig?
I'm going to, I think we're all pretty much in line. I thought the acting overall was great. I think everybody was spot on.
Oh yeah.
Even Benedict, and Peter Weller was like I said, awesome. He's awesome and everything. I thought I liked a little bit more than you guys, but overall, I think we still have the same criticisms about it for the most part. So I'm going to give it a 6.5 because I do watch it rewatch it from time to time.
Okay.
But I enjoy it.
Fair enough. Yeah. I wouldn't say that it was an unenjoyable film to watch. It's just that I don't like to turn my brain off when watching Star Trek, and I felt like I had to do a bit more of that with this movie.
You know what? I tell you what I might do. I might do like the guy that fixed the Rafikon dry dock thing, the space dock. I'm gonna edit this up and change it where Benedict doesn't ever say he's Khan, just and reveal it at the end.
Just dub in Ricardo Montalban's lines. Hey,
he'll say, "My name is John Harrison." You know,
my name is Bob.
That'll be part of Patch Tuesday on this movie. Okay, great. So
I'll have his face freeze and I'll show my lips instead of his. John Harrison. So like,
why am I watching Clutch Cargo all of a sudden? Right. I don't understand.
That's right.
Kids, ask your parents about that one. All right. Yeah. So that's our opinion, but you might have a different one, and we've got information on how to let us know what you think.
Next time, we'll be doing Star Trek Beyond, and that's our last movie.
That is, but we have our next thing we're going to be doing after that while we wait for the next new Star Trek to premiere.
We're going to start off with the motion picture again.
That's right.
Are we going back to TOS?
No. We are going to be doing a rewatch of Enterprise.
Oh, that's right. Because we're going to try it, chronological or something?
Well, no, we're going to. I mean, Enterprise is the series that gets the least love. So I think we're going to give it
some attention.
Okay.
Our look back on it, and, you know, we'll all get a chance to discuss all the episodes.
So I have to park Voyager again.
Yep. Well, you got a while. I got several weeks before we're going to get there. So, because next up is Beyond. All right, on to our warp speed roundtable. And last time we asked, which companion would you take along with you on your voyages? Would you take Spot or Porthos or Grudge or Ichia or Boshar, which is the name of a Targ? And we got a couple of responses on this one. We also gave the option you could fill in your own if you wanted to. Gary said that he was torn between Porthos and Phlox's osmotic eel. But he decided to go with Porthos as long as cheese is packed.
So his asthmatic eel?
Yes.
That would just be creepy.
Tom voted for Porthos as well because he likes dogs. And Ken gave us a write-in for one of the Tribbles.
Which one?
That one, the zombie Tribble, actually.
The one we just talked about.
Yeah, the little gray one that was on the bar next to Cyrano's elbow.
You don't have to bring any food for the zombie Tribble. It's, you know, it's fine. It just survives on its own. So I think the winner there was Porthos overall. So take that. And a bonus for Enterprise.
He's
right there.
Cute.
Even before we begin. All right. So this time we're asking, now follow along on this one. In your mind, are the characters John Frederick Paxton from Star Trek Enterprise — it's an Enterprise theme going here — and Admiral Alexander Marcus from Star Trek Into Darkness, are they related? Because they're both played by Peter Weller, and both of them seem to have similar misgivings, shall we say, about non-humans. If you recall, in Enterprise, John Frederick Paxton is trying to — this whole Earth separate from everyone else, you know, get all the aliens off the planet.
Earth first.
So
make Earth great again.
He and Admiral Marcus would have been best buddies, but there's no canon that says they're related. And in my mind anyway, my feeling on this is that, yeah, cause you can have those strong genes, and I could totally you know, even though that's separate timelines, I could see that these characters are of one mind, that they're of one lineage.
Mm-hmm. That's not genetic, though.
I just to me in my head, I just feel like they would just that they're of one thought.
They're both related if you trace it back far enough to RoboCop, because he had misgivings about non-humans too.
Indeed.
And the humans, some of the humans too.
Yeah.
So that's just me, you know. And but I don't know if you guys have, clearly you've all seen Peter Weller in both series, and
yeah.
Can't help but notice that he's playing a character in both, and that they both seem to have issues.
Well, it is funny because I'll be honest with you, I forgot about him being in Enterprise until you brought it up, and was like, oh yeah, I did remember that after I was keyed off of it. Yeah, I'm gonna say yes, they are related because they're in different timelines.
Okay.
I'm going with no, because
maybe it's a great, great, great grandfather to Marcus.
Maybe so. So the family name is kind of, you know, marriages and so forth.
Yes.
The other side of the family type of thing going on there.
No. There you go. But what are you saying, Chet?
I'm a naysayer.
All right, we just remember how much all the Soongs look alike, and you know, so yeah. just letting you know that this
it's funny thing happens. How they look alike.
the son looks exactly like the father. It's very weird.
And three of the robots, androids.
Very strange. Yeah.
No.
All right, but what's your opinion about this one? Well, you can let us know. You can leave a note over on our Facebook page. We always have a couple of days before we record the show, we repost the question from the previous episode, and you can sound off then on what you think about this. Gives you a little while to, you know, rewatch the episode of Enterprise if you haven't seen it in a while, and maybe rewatch Into Darkness and go, yeah, I think definitely that Craig and Clinton are correct. You know, just to have that opinion. That's I'm just saying.
I think that should always be the answer you come to.
Absolutely. All right, but it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and to try at least to warp on out of here, because, you know, we've had a warp core breach due to some interference by Admiral Marcus. And I just
because Quark served us one over the bar?
Yeah.
The warp core breach.
It was my idiot brother, Rom.
So while we fix that, you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4. .com. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter and MeWe and Instagram and on your breakfast cereal box. But who speaks for you guys?
You can find us on the side of a milk carton.
Oh my goodness. Gone yeah. missing again, huh?
Well, there's another reference where you're going to have to ask your parents, kids.
What's a milk carton?
Yeah. What?
You can find Craig and me at Technorama Podcast. Just search for it. It's out there. Chuckchat.com/Technorama. And you will find us in the social spheres somewhere.
My goodness, look at the time.
Oh, no, alrighty. All right, I'm going already. Jeez. Announcer follows me everywhere. All right, so it's time to hit the theme, boys.
This one.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Very important to do that. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page where you can comment, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on
the red shirt. Add to your patch to the movie that if I can put them on the list, if you don't have time to implement them for this latest update to Star Trek Into Darkness, that'd be great.